Major funding for the following edition of Soundings comes from the Carnegie Corporation of New York and from the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. The views expressed are the participants' own and do not reflect those of the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company or the Carnegie Corporation of New York. From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. From Protest to Power, the first of four discussions about the recent history of civil rights in the United States, this week on Soundings. My guests are Howard Lee and William Chafe. Howard Lee was the first black mayor of a predominantly white southern town since Reconstruction. He served as mayor of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, from 1969 through 1975. Howard Lee also served as Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources and Community Development under Governor James B. Hunt, Jr. of North Carolina. William Chafe teaches at Duke University. Among his books are The Unfinished Journey, America Since World War II, and Civilities and Civil Rights, Greensboro, North Carolina, and the Black Struggle for Freedom, both published by Oxford University Press. Here is Howard Lee.
You know, I have to start with my own feelings during that time. The desire was always there. And in reflecting on my own feelings, we used to sit, for example, in dormitory rooms and talk about what if, or how great if. And I believe that individuals tend to feed a kind of a group spirit, which then transforms itself into courage of the numbers. And it's those numbers that will go out and test it, try it, and see what happens. So I think it was a kind of a through the years. I remember when I grew up in Georgia as a young 15-year-old, I had the tendency toward protest to the extent that I saw my father insulted by a white grocery store owner because I was chewing chewing gum. And he said to my father, tell that boy to shut up, to stop chewing the chewing gum. And my father, of course, reacted. And the grocer took all of his paycheck that particular time. The next day, I felt a sense of protest. And as an individual, I went into the small town in which I lived, decided that I would not use the colored restroom, instead use the white men's restroom. Didn't feel I'd protested enough after that and did the ultimate. Went into the white female's restroom.
Oh, my goodness.
It was then that I was beaten up by a Klansman. Now, from that point on, I simply said, I'll do anything I can to help change the South.
Bill Chafe?
Yeah, well, I think that the point that Howard's making is very important because we tend to forget that these people come out of a community and a tradition. And, you know, there's this, I think, view in the country at large that the civil rights movement suddenly happened one day and like an epiphany, like an immaculate conception, you know. But in fact, that's not true. It grew out of a community of sustained protest over the years. In Greensboro, the inspiration, not the direct immediate inspiration for the sit-ins, but the long-range inspiration, were school teachers. School teachers who had taught these students in Greensboro schools, black schools, to stand up for themselves and to be the best people they could be. Ministers who, on Sunday morning and in church groups, talked about their having the courage to be themselves. These young people had one teacher in particular in Greensboro, had these youngsters in homeroom filling out voter registration envelopes to be mailed to the adult population. So they were encouraged to think about protest and about freedom, but those things created a kind of intention in their minds which made them ready to act themselves when the point in time came for them to act.
They were developing what, a political language, a political vocabulary into which to translate the reactions and the feelings that Howard Lee has described. Let me ask you to consider this, Howard Lee, Bill Chafe. What was the nature of discrimination? There's a kind of an obvious angle into our topic, civil rights since 1964. I don't want you to put a lot of ugly words on the table necessarily, but what was it like? What happened then, again, to furnish these inspirations that you've been talking about? Howard?
I think over the years, watching incidences which would take place within the community that made one feel that I sure would like to find some way not to have to live through that. Mm-hmm. The level of disrespect that was expressed toward the elders of the community. The fact that a young black kid was either boy or girl until he or she grew up and became older and then became uncle or aunt. This kind of disrespect played heavy, although most kids, including myself, accepted it silently. But that was a buildup. Then there was the continuous, I think Bill makes an excellent point about the educational system, because in an effort to encourage and motivate young black kids to learn, there had to be drawn by the teachers a hope for something better to come, and that through education one could develop the mindset and the ability and an intellectual capacity to create that new environment. The fact that one felt an invisible ceiling, no matter how well one performed, it was not possible to reach for some of the levels that one might desire to reach. These are some of the things, I think, which silently built up inside of the hearts and the minds of many of these kids. And it was difficult, even in spite of all that, to still carry a strong sense of hope, to believe that it could really happen, but a willingness to keep fighting in hope that it would happen.
Is it fair or accurate, Howard Lee, Bill Chafe, to say that the civil rights movement in the mid-1960s was solely a Southern phenomenon? What was your sense of what was going on in the rest of the country, Howard?
Nothing. I think it was solely a Southern phenomenon, and I think it was so because there were so many people in other sections of the country who felt that they did not have the problem. You might remember how it's been paralleled, Chicken Bone Special, for example, how blacks would leave the South to go to the land of milk and honey, the great land of promise in New York. And many blacks would come back South and talk about how bad it was for us down here and how well they would present themselves doing there. So they did not, in my opinion, see that they had a problem that had to be dealt with through the civil rights movement. So while nothing has, in my opinion, happened to parallel the civil rights movement in other sections of the country, in many ways, I still think many people don't see the problem that the South had as being the same problem that the North and other sections had.
How about in contemporary terms, Bill Chafe? Is the civil rights movement still, does it remain principally a Southern phenomenon? We have look at how many hundreds of thousands of Hispanics in South Texas, in New Mexico, Arizona, and Southern California. Is that the kind of modern, late 1980s civil rights analog to what was going on in the mid-60s?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind the historical context, and there will never again be a civil rights movement like there was in the early 1960s, because there will never again be the kind of clarity and crispness and moral certainty about the issues. You were talking here about a whole system of laws which said the blacks and whites should never be together.
And there's where the analogy breaks down with
that's
the Hispanics
where
today.
And the problems now are so complicated and infused with the whole social economic structure. At that point, there was a sense of there being a very dramatic, clear-cut, simple, very moral struggle to be waged. I think that in that sense, it was a wonderful Southern movement. It was a religious movement. It was a church movement. It spoke a lot about the South as a region, biracial region.
Mm-hmm.
The North didn't have quite the same kind of church structure or community structure or set of problems. The North had a very different set of problems, which are much more similar to the problems we all have today, namely economic oppression, class discrimination, continued informal racism, mm-hmm. not necessarily buttressed by the law. And I think that what you saw in the North developing in the mid-60s, in the early 60s, was the kind of very different call for black self-assertion associated with Malcolm X
and the
black Muslim movement, which was a very strong message, which eventually began to also make a strong impact in the South, because some of the SNCC people in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia eventually came to the same similar idea of black power in the late 60s, because they also became convinced that the existing structure of society was not going to be one that they could or wanted to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think eventually what happens in the South is that you have a parallel development of kind of black separatism, which develops. But the early civil rights movement is so distinctive to the Southern region and to a sense of optimism and also faith and commitment and belief in the moral justification of the struggle.
Howard Lee, how would you characterize the differences, the similarities in the political atmosphere of this country between the time, say, that you were the mayor of Chapel Hill, the first black to be elected mayor of a predominantly white Southern town since Reconstruction. Have I got that right?
Yes.
How would you characterize that difference between then and now?
Oh, then it was such a unique success story for black to be elected mayor that my election in Little Chapel Hill, North Carolina, was carried in newspapers in something like 12 countries. That's how newsworthy it was. And many people found it unbelievable that a black could be elected in a town that was close to 85% white and only approximately 15% black. I was an instant celebrity. But at the same time, found myself subjected to ethnic pressures that are far different than what blacks and or whites or women in political office will experience today.
Be specific
in,
for
in
me.
That,
what do you mean?
Blacks had waited so long
to
have someone in a position of power who could possibly deliver all of the services which had been denied, like the paved streets, better housing, water and sewer, which they'd been denied, recreational opportunities, job opportunities within the city itself, that there were expectations that all of these problems would be solved overnight. And when they were not solved overnight, there was a level of frustration arising within the black community that maybe having a black mayor was not all that great. I find some of my political colleagues today sometimes getting in serious trouble because they do try to respond to problems based on race and ethnicism, and I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Bill Chafe, following up on what Howard Lee has been putting on the table here, I recall the comments of a recent participant on Soundings who says that depending upon your political point of view and your ideology, the wonderful thing about the American political structure is that even if we can't live up to all the needs and desires that we want to fulfill, we at least have the principles there in our Constitution, in our political structures, to what? Inspire us to do the right thing eventually. Is that a lot of blab when it comes to civil rights? How would you, as a historian and a political analyst, react to what our recent history of civil rights? Have we measured up to the dream of Dr. King, for example?
Well, I'm tempted to say that it's more blah blah than anything else, because I think that in fact, when it takes you 100 years to make the 14th and 15th Amendments a reality,
mm-hmm.
When it takes you 300 years to start dealing with a problem which you've had since the beginning, that's not exactly being very rapid in implementing your values and your principles. Now, it's important the principles are there because they call us to a standard of accountability. And the civil rights movement, of course, could not have been as successful as it was were those standards and those principles not there to mobilize the whole community to do something about the history of oppression. But I think that the dream that Dr. King had was one which talked not only about abolishing racial discrimination, it was also about creating equality. And if you remember the March on Washington in 1963, it was a march for jobs and freedom.
It was, in other words, it was not only something historical, it was affirmative in its action. It looked backwards as well as forwards at the same time.
And it also focused on jobs and on economic questions, not right. just abolishing those laws that were there.
Right.
And it seems to me that where we have succeeded is in the great legislation of 64 and 65 and 68, which created voting rights and abolished economic discrimination and public accommodation discrimination. Where we have not come near to dealing with Dr. King's dream is in creating the substance of equal opportunity.
Are you talking about the legislation that exists between 1964 and 1989? What do you have in mind?
It has much more to do with the political, with the public policies which deal with jobs, with health care, with housing, with the kinds of things that Howard as a politician has spent his life trying to make better.
But are those in fact racial issues, Howard Lee? Or do we get back, in effect, to community issues that we're all grappling with, and therefore we're not necessarily dealing with civil rights anymore? How about this?
I think we have to accept that they hit harder upon the minorities, and in most communities, upon blacks, because the opportunities for gaining those economic resources, which allows one then to go out and purchase these services, mm-hmm. are not there. For example, in North Carolina, in the eastern part of the state, we know that one of the most serious problems we still have here is that of lack of economic opportunities. And people there are very, very poor, and therefore the problems of housing and health and all these others hit harder upon the minority community. I think, however, politicians would be remiss if those in power went out and tried to simply say, we're going to do this for blacks, or we will do this for women, or we will do this for Hispanics. Because then I think what happens is the community becomes mobilized in opposition to. And with that kind of split, it would be difficult, it seems to me, to get something passed through a political body on that basis in these days. Mm-hmm. We need to recognize that we're living in a time when there are conservative reactionaries to many of these kinds of problems are based on a small group interest. Therefore, I would submit that today's movement has to be based on problems that impact the community, and it has to be presented as being having as much my interest involved as it does the fellow next door, regardless of his or her race or sex.
Mm-hmm.
The problem of the 1980s is that it's much harder to be aware of the ways in which racism and economic inequality still disenfranchise so many people. It's harder to be aware of that because it's not on the front burner. It's not part of our national news. We have a president, President Reagan, who was able to point to the fact that, well, there's that black person who is a corporate executive, and there's that woman who is on a board, et cetera, and there's been these great success stories, and so we don't have a problem of racial discrimination or sex discrimination anymore. Now, that seems to be persuasive to many people who don't see the clarity that was there in the 1960s. They don't think that civil rights and discrimination is as much of an issue, and it's harder to get at inside of those economic and social structures that make oppression still a reality for so many millions of people. So civil rights is something which we identify with the past, even though, in fact, it's still very much with us.
How about this, Howard Lee? You have moved the arc of your career, as it were. You moved from politician. You were part-time academic at the university in Chapel Hill.
Yes.
And then the mayor of Chapel Hill, and now a successful entrepreneur in the Research Triangle area. Is Bill Chafe on the money here?
Do not want to paint a rosy picture here, and certainly don't have the time on this program to go and list all of the other things, but I think the future of the movement in my opinion, has to be centered around now gaining access to at least two institutions which have direct impact on the quality of lives that people can enjoy. The political institution being fully a part of that, and the economic institution. As relates to the political institution, we're going to have to put aside partisan politics and deal more in bipartisan politics. And we're going to have to stop thinking that all blacks should be liberals when except that some have to be conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And we simply have to own businesses that are not black businesses, but put together the resources that can employ huge numbers of blacks. And until we do it as people and stop simply complaining about the barriers of racism and start doing something more by accomplishing in areas that are available to us, we will be stymied from accomplishing sooner than we think we can the possibilities of overcoming racism.
Howard Lee, Bill Chafe, let's return to a point that that we discussed earlier in our conversation. That is to say, the variance in strength and size of the civil rights movement from one community to another, and at the same time, the question of where we place the responsibility for the virtues of the civil rights movement in America. We think, for example, of names like Martin Luther King Jr., and that isn't necessarily always going to be the case. Bill Chafe?
Well, I think especially for the younger generation, for the students I teach at Duke and other universities, I think there's this easy tendency to think of the civil rights movement as Dr. King. And Dr. King was it, and he made it happen. And when Dr. King died and was assassinated, it ended. The problem with that is that it portrays as something happening through a single individual and on a national basis, something which in fact grew out of countless homes and millions of streets and in thousands of churches throughout the country, and especially in the South. That the civil rights movement really grew out of individual experiences and family experiences in local communities, and those communities created the movement. Dr. King came in to those communities, or often had dialogue with those communities, and was able to transform those inspiring local movements into something which then attracted and resulted in national action and executive action in the White House. But the movement did not happen through a single individual or from above. The movement happened from people in Chapel Hill, in Greensboro, in Selma, in Philadelphia, Mississippi, in Greenwood. It happened because they cared enough in their communities. These are nameless people. These are people who are not in the history books, but they made it happen. And if we forget that, then we tend to believe that only single heroic individuals can make change, and that's not the way change happens in America.
We end up with myth and not history,
right,
necessarily. Howard Lee?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with Bill's presentation on that. It seems to me that one great concern I have about young people today is their sense of not feeling any responsibility for carrying on the change.
It's happened,
over, and we have arrived. Mm-hmm. And in addition to being a local challenge now, it also has to be a personal challenge to do those things as individuals we can to bring about change. As Bill has indicated, there were countless numbers of individuals who used their influence to bring about change. It would take one simple little story, like a restaurant in Chapel Hill called the College Cafe, where all the protests did not break down the barriers of the College Cafe and open it up to integration. It was the cook who one morning walked out and said, "I'm not cooking anymore until my people can eat in this restaurant." And within an hour, the College Cafe was integrated. it's a phenomenal story. That's an individual kind of. Can we transpose that from yesterday to a new responsibility among both black and white young people and all other ethnic groups today? Do you laugh, for example, at the sexual or racial joke that is told and pass it off as something harmless?
Uh-huh.
Or do you challenge the individual who told the story to think more seriously about the impact they're having? Something as simple as that. I teach a course at UNC called institutionalized discrimination. And those are the kinds of individual responsibilities I try to teach to professionals who are going out and who are helping people. But it's also the same kind of responsibilities many of our youngsters who are coming through school today, I think, must accept, not based on the fact that I'm black and I'm oppressed, but based on the fact that I'm a human, and I will not stand for any human being repressed.
Mm-hmm. You sound, Howard Lee, as though you are cautiously optimistic about what the next 25 years might hold for civil rights in America. Are you, in fact?
I'm very optimistic. I feel that in spite of the signs of continued barriers and difficult challenges ahead, I just think that we're well on our way to making a great amount of progress. I just hope that I'm around to be a part of it and to be able to see it, because I do believe that while we'll go through peaks and valleys and ups and downs, that there are an awful lot of people committed as individuals, regardless of their racial identification, to opening up opportunities and giving people a chance. Mm-hmm. That's it.
How about it, Bill Chafe? Do you join Howard Lee in that optimism?
I wish I could. I'd like to. I think that we have a chance to make progress toward that goal. What I worry about is the fact that we are becoming a two-tiered society, and that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and too large a number of those who are poor are Hispanic and black and women. And I think that one of the things we have to sort of recapture in America is the sense of community that the civil rights movement had, the sense that we are a commonwealth. America is a community of people who are responsibility to each other, and in effect, it is to the self-interest of those of us who are well off to make sure that everyone has certain kinds of decent living conditions, or else we're going to lose that community. We're going to become two nations. If we become two nations, then we will have lost everything that we've ever struggled for. And I think that we still have yet to come to that kind of consensus and direction of community in our national life that is necessary to move toward making that goal a reality.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to the first segment in a series of four discussions entitled From Protest to Power, The Recent History of Civil Rights in the United States. My guests were William Chafe of Duke University and Howard Lee of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Next on From Protest to Power, the authors of two books about civil rights in America, Paula Giddings and Mary King. Soundings is available on cassette. Send $4 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Ask for program number 436. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. When writing, please mention the call letters of this radio station. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Major support for this edition of Soundings came from the Carnegie Corporation of New York and from the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. Funding for Soundings also comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
From Protest to Power, the first of four discussions about the recent history of civil rights in the United States, this week on Soundings. Listen for Howard Lee and William Chafe. Howard Lee was the first black mayor of a predominantly white southern town since Reconstruction. William Chafe teaches at Duke University. From Protest to Power, Part 1, this week on Soundings.